You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, fight fans of the BTR Boxing Podcast Network. I'm Sean, joined as always by Johnston, to give a little bit of an introduction to this particular new podcast, which we're really excited about, which is the George Groves Boxing Club. And how honoured are we, Johnston, to have George Groves' Boxing Club dropping onto our feed, that very first episode of his. Every boxer now that's retiring is getting their own podcast. You get to hear the stories behind it. George Groves' Boxing Club is a club where everyone is invited. It's a place where you can find out everything about the fight game. He's got great guests coming onto his show. He's got new episodes coming out every Wednesday. And it ties in with us so well because George Grove actually featured on our very first Legendary Nights episode when we covered his first fight with Carl Froch. So how ironic is it that George Groves' Boxing Club first episode is dropping on the BTR Boxing Podcast Network?
It is very ironic. Very first Legendary Night, George Groves, Carl Froch, the first fight. And obviously what that did for British boxing was unbelievable. Look, we are fans of George Groves, so it's great to have him doing his own podcast. I mean, when he was seeing him on the other shows, he talks sense. He breaks down fights well. And it's going to be nice to hear some of those background stories that we are trying to tell on our Legendary Night. So good luck to George. We wish him all the best. And, you know, he's a fighter that I've seen a few times as well myself. And he even sent me a little message back in the day on Twitter when I was on it, saying to me, thanks for coming to me fight. And I thought that was quite nice of George. So from that point, I thought I'd follow George. So good to see him on doing his own podcast. And as I say, the irony of it was that our very first Legendary Night was Groves and Froch. So welcome to the podcast network, George.
Yeah, absolutely. Welcome to podcasting in general. And thanks for being a part on this first episode of your George Groves Boxing Club on the BTR Boxing Podcast Network. For all our listeners, please enjoy this very first episode. And if you want to find more episodes, you can do so by typing in George Groves Boxing Club and you will find it on all available podcasting apps. Enjoy the episode, fight fans.
I lost the fight and I stopped counting.
Do you want me to tell you what your record was?
So I missed that.
That's what you miss.
I do miss
the sneaky
that.
Body shot.
A sneaky body shot.
Calling out Lennox Lewis on the podcast.
I boxed Carl Froch at Wembley Stadium in front of 80,000 people.
How about someone like Tony Bellew?
You had me up until right here.
Let's get on with it. I'm George. He's Deck. Hello. It's the George Groves Boxing Club.
George Groves, good to see you again, but what are we doing here?
Deck, we're here. We are starting a club, right? This is an amazing club. It's our podcast club. We're going to take this new realm and we're going to deliver some quality content for not just the boxing fans, but the boxing fans and beyond. It's a club and everyone's included. If you're a listener, you are in. We're going to do some fun stuff and we're going to give you some stuff that you may have never heard before, because I want to be able to get guests on who have a particular insight into aspects of boxing, and we can go on a deep dive of that knowledge and maybe get some hidden gems and get some stuff that I don't know about yet. And the wider public, as I say, can listen and enjoy.
So what made you start this club?
I'm actually retired, Deck. You know?
Oh, yeah?
I'm retired from boxing.
I didn't notice.
I was wondering, what is the next calling? And I think this is it. This is it. I've realised, for a man who doesn't actually like talking, I do an awful lot of talking.
Okay, so we've got a club. How many listeners we got? Let's get into nuts and bolts now. How many listeners we got so far?
Well, right now we've got zero listeners. You know, you don't actually have to box to join this club. It's not that sort of boxing club. It's a listening club.
I hear you. Pun intended. Did you get that?
No, I missed that one. Listening club.
I said, I hear you.
Oh, right. Yeah.
See, that's the level of comedy I think we should aspire to. So right now, speaking of listeners, someone out there is our first listener.
Our first real official listener, because take out people who are essentially working on this.
Yeah, I mean,
on this club.
They should be bloody listening.
Well, I mean, we want to grow the show bigger than the five people in this studio today.
So have you got a plan?
I've got plans.
Yeah, go on.
I'm working on episodes about sparring. There's episodes about ring walks, about pad work, about footwork, contracts. Lots of things that are part and parcel of the boxing game. We might talk a little bit about Jeddah. We might talk about Vegas. I've been there. York Hall, boxed there. Madison Square Gardens, visited it. We'll go through nutrition. We got it all.
That makes more sense to me now. The club is starting to take shape, I think.
We're gonna release an episode a week. We want people... We're going to be punchy. This is going to be the best thing that people have ever listened to.
The first episode, then, what were we thinking?
First episode...
We've got to start big.
Me and you are going to talk about me.
Perfect.
So we're going to start episode one. It's going to be about me. It's going to be about retirement, which should lead nicely on to what happens in retirement. You start a podcast, and this is the podcast to listen to.
We're here. The doors are open.
I officially declare, Deck, the club is open.
So, George Groves, you retired 2019. Do you know, I'll tell you what, let's start with this. Do you know what your record was? What your finishing record was and how many knockouts you had?
I think my son asked me, my son's five, he just started being aware that I boxed. I'm trying to teach him that winning is the absolute must. You know, we don't celebrate mediocrity. You know, I'm maybe not the best parent. And he asked me, you know, I think it wasn't what was your record, but how many fights did you win? And I don't know. I lost the fight and I stopped counting.
Do you want me to tell you what your record was?
I'm going to go.
Go on, have a go.
I lost four and I won 28.
Yes.
There you go.
How many knockouts?
21.
20. I've got here. Okay, here's one you definitely won't get. How many rounds did you box as a professional?
172.
No, 205. Oh. I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you what, you probably should have got me on board for this because I did notice something. You mentioned you lost four. Frotch, Jack, Smith. All four people with one syllable in their surname. What were you doing going near people with one syllable in their surname? You should have got rid of them straight away. I could have told you that. Anyone could have told you that. You should have stopped boxing people with one syllable in their surname. So now when you have a comeback, say when, not if. Don't do it.
Don't fight Frotch. Don't fight Jack.
Stay away from him.
Mayweather, Zizi.
Easy money for you. Chudinov, who you won your world title against?
Not Fury. Joshua.
Fury's fine. That's two. I always feel like when a boxer retires, it's like a death, or it's the closest thing to death. Sorry about that. Just stick with me for a sec. But St. George Groves, that guy who used to run down to the ring listening to Spitfire by Prodigy, he's gone. And you wake up on Monday morning and you're George Groves, the, as you like to put it, the civilian.
Living on Civvy Street.
Civvy Street like the rest of us.
It's awful, isn't it? Jesus, I was once a superhero. Deck, you know, at the end of my career, I was so tired. I was so tired, Deck.
I know the feeling.
You don't. You're living on Civvy Street, mate. Where do you get the... I was tired and I needed a little rest. And that's the problem, I think, with these people that come out of retirement is they have that little rest and then they're like, oh, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great. I've still got it.
Because, I mean, you always think... You had a full house. I always think this. You, when you retired, you won a world title. So you achieved your life ambition. You had money in the bank, I can tell from your motor. And you had all your faculties completely. You know, you're, as we can tell, you're totally healthy, safe. Those three things I'd like to think is a full house. Was that why you were so, it was so easy for you to walk away and to go, right, that's me done. I've got all three, I got the hat trick.
Yeah, I think so. And I was fortunate enough to get into that situation, as you say, at the full house. In the end, I had to win that world title. I just kept falling over at the last hurdle. But then the opportunity came up for it against Fedor Chudinov of Russia, the former world champion. Bramall Lane in Sheffield, a happy hunting ground for me.
somewhere I used to frequently visit as an amateur. Tough place to live and fight, you know. I used to get on the train at London, at King's Cross or Euston, and it'd be sunny. And as you pulled into Sheffield, thunderstorms would start, it'd be raining and it was cold and dreary. And you're not in the nice part of Sheffield that's sort of like happening with the uni town, that you're like out on the outskirts, probably where they used to mine. So that was my plan. I was like, win, lose or draw, I've got to win this tournament. And if I don't, it doesn't matter. This is it. Any other fights that come up along the way, they might linger me on that Piccadilly line. I want to get off. So I had a bit of an exit strategy. Maybe not a lot of fighters have that. Maybe most fighters are probably not fortunate enough to be in that situation. But I love the idea of 10 years in and out. So I turned over at 20 years of age, and by 30, that was going to be me done. Love to have gone out on a Windex, but if I'd beaten Callum Smith out in Saudi Arabia in Jeddah, there was a big chunk of change on the table that was hard to walk away from. They put a big win bonus involved in there to try and prize a bit more blood, sweat and tears from you. They picked Jeddah. I thought that was interesting. We go to Saudi Arabia. Jeddah for the cheddar was what I was trying to name it.
Rowdy and Saudi.
Rowdy and Saudi, yeah. I think we finally got there. But yeah, I was tired. And I think the idea of going back to the well and trying to renegotiate another fight and trying to then sell it and go through with it just felt like something I wasn't keen on, something I wasn't really interested at that point. So I loved the end date, and that was that. And yeah, I mean, there was a moment even after winning the semi-final against Eubank, sitting in the ambulance waiting to go to the hospital with a dislocated shoulder. And I say to my wife, well, that's it. That weren't bad. That'll do. That's okay. And she's just like, oh, shut up. Like, I'll talk to you in the morning. You're going to change your mind. You always do.
I remember when you announced your retirement, a lot of fanfare around it. I remember when you announced your retirement, it was in all the papers. Everyone was talking about it. When that was all faded and you wake up the first morning and you're just George Groves, 30-year-old, by the way, and also have ticked the boxes and you've achieved your lifelong ambition, which I dare say most of us, barely anyone has done that at the age of 30. A lot of people don't even know what they want to do with their lives by the age of 30, and you've done everything. So what do you do when you wake up? What's the first thing on the agenda? Bowl of bran flakes or start crying? What do you do? Or cry into the bran flakes? Bit of both.
No crying yet. Boxing does this thing where you know, and as you go through the stages and you're in these bigger fights and it takes a little bit more time to prepare, but then you'll have a bigger rest after, so you have that downtime in between camps. And then I had this really intense camp for the last fight, which was 5-6 months in the making, where it was on off, it was on off, and then it finally happened. And then, well, naturally, you'd have a rest after that. And I'm still in that lovely honeymoon rest period 4 years in, waiting for the next camp, next fight to show up. It's kind of how I think and feel. There's no anxiety about, right, well, I've got to get back, got to get fit, got to get back in the gym. Sure, I'm human, I'm a man, look in the mirror, I say, well, I still got it, you know, I still got it. 8 weeks off shreds, that's the rule. Got to be at least, yeah. So a shortened camp to be fight ready. But don't ever actually try and test that theory, because it can, you know, you're running the risk of disappointment, Deck. But that is more than enough for me. And I don't know. My next door neighbour, Arvin, lovely guy, retired from his job. He retired exactly the same time as I did. And I tried to keep my, you know, I'm not sending out the group message to the WhatsApp neighbours, you know, saying, oh, you're right, lads, I've retired. But he'd maybe read it in the papers or whatnot. Out of concern, you know, he's reached out to me. He's worried about me at 30 that I'm going to wake up purpose. Yeah. And he's invited me along to a few of stuff that he's got his own concerns about retirement. I kind of think we're on different pages a little bit, you know, but I really appreciate the sentiment. He said, do we want to go play badminton? And badminton's one of them sports where you can't just muscle your way through. You know, I'm not going to get past Arvin with
Arvin
athleticism.
Arvin will smoke you, mate.
And that was the panic. That was the anxiety. So I've politely let him down like half a dozen times. I don't know how much longer I can sort of get away with it before confessing that I just can't face the fact that you are going to smoke me at badminton. But, you know, there's bike rides, long walks, loads of things that he's really good at now.
What, walking?
Better than me. I'm not a walker, Deg. I didn't walk for an awful long time. I'm a runner. You know, I used to run as a kid. If I had to get somewhere, I ran. And now I don't run, so now I drive. Yeah. I'll walk the dog, but I can't stand still.
You can't walk the walk. how old are we talking? How old's Arvin? You're 30. You retire on the same day as Arvin. How old's Arvin?
How old do you retire as a man now? Just in case I don't do many.
I think it's 65.
It might be 65. Maybe a little bit older. He looks like someone who would take the later retirement if possible.
Legend.
You know, because he loves. You know, he's.
Sounds
he's
like you.
He's a go-getter. No, the opposite of me. Yeah. I'm out. I'm in and out early. I don't do overtime, Dec.
I wanted to ask you as well. No offense or anything, but you were boxing at 12 stone. And I know at the time it was hard for you to... I mean, it's hard for all boxers. It should be hard for you to make 12 stone. How did it feel knowing that you'll probably never... Not probably. You'll never weigh 12 stone again. You will never weigh 12 stone again in your life.
People, you know, even people say, I've got no regrets. It's like, you've got regrets, right? There must be something.
What's your one?
I treated myself, right, to a really expensive Tom Ford suit. Only off the rack... for the final press conference out in Jeddah, knowing that I was retiring and knowing that I was never going to fit in it ever again, I thought it might be an incentive to stay in reasonable shape. I thought maybe I could get it, you know, let out a little bit, and I have had it let out a little bit.
Still no good?
And it's still no good. It's never going to fit me ever again. Been in the gym a little bit. I've had my biomass measured or whatever they do.
Dangerous know. Business, that.
Yeah.
Stay clear of that.
And I mean, my skeletal muscle is above the 12 stone limit. I'm never going to make 12 stone ever again.
No.
And it's fun until someone told me that very bluntly a year or two ago. And it only just dawned on me then. Because I was like, yeah, sure, I might still have it. I can still throw a punch, I can still do this. But making that 12 stone limit is not going to happen.
Mm. When you retire... you got nothing in the distance, so do you just go like that? Breaks are off forever. And then with that in mind, how easy is it to just get totally overweight very quickly?
I think it must be. I mean...
Again, no offence intended.
Yeah. Just from looking at you right now. you'll go on TV and you'll do a spot for Sky, and then, you know, because of my history with Cole Frotch, they'll put me next to Frotch, and... He
could do 12 stone.
He's still 12 stone. Like, yeah. I think he has to eat up into that division. You know, he looks like, you know, I think he's just the rage that flows within him burns up calories. And it's not fair because I'm standing next to him, like, and the camera definitely adds 10 pounds and Frotch adds another 10 pounds. And then, you know, I'm getting fat shamed on Twitter, and I'm looking in the mirror going, Jesus, like, I'm 8 weeks off shreds. Why am I getting food, right? Then people will come to your rescue on Twitter, and that's even worse.
Oh, no.
You know, it's like, leave him alone. Let him eat his pies. He's done his hard work.
I think the question, the burning question here is, what sort of weight do you reckon Arvin's at the moment?
What weight is Arvin doing?
Yeah, what do you reckon he's weighing in at?
I've got a lumpy size advantage on
Have
Arvin.
You?
Yeah, yeah. Height and reach, and a little bit more as well. I mean, he's lean.
You've got to get Arvin on some scales. You've got to weigh him. Because I'm picturing a sort of rangy, southpaw, welterweight sort of counter-puncher who's amazing at badminton. So I think you've got to get him on some scales, like, now. And we need to sort this out. Because if there's a lot of difference, maybe we need to keep you apart. But I feel like there's a catchweight situation. So do you reckon you could get him on the scales?
I'll get him on the scales. Yeah, I'll get him on the scales. I'll knock on his door. I've got scales indoors. I'll just give him a quick knock. He's always... there or thereabouts.
Yeah, he's got nothing to do, has he?
Well, I mean, if he's out on a walk, I'm not chasing him down. I'll never catch him. He walks miles and miles and miles. He's the fittest man I know. So, but I'll get him on the scales. No bother.
Have you ever seen him doing those walks in a sweatsuit, full like towel around the head, all that sort of stuff?
I haven't.
Like Cuban style.
But I don't think he needs it.
Oh, they're the dangerous ones.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you said Southport, I could see it in my mind, and. Anxiety hit right in straight away. I was thinking, oh, rangy southpaw. Yeah. But then straight away visualised that on the badminton court as well. And I ain't got the knees for it, Dec. They squeak now.
I think he knows it.
And yeah.
He's heard that. Okay, I'll ask you a bit more about those knees in a sec, but we'll have a quick break first. Well, you talk about your knees creaking. What sort of things are you actually getting up to these days when you haven't got a camp, when you haven't got a fight? What does George Groves' day look like?
Well, that's the question. I mean, I do the school run, which is fun.
But you don't run it?
No, I don't run it. No, not anymore. I have to have this conversation every day with the parents at drop-off. I've made some friends, you know. Lad started school a couple of years ago now. So, and that's the hardest thing is, what are you doing today? And I just lean in and go, nothing. Like, and these are some of these people there, you know, they got very important jobs. They got to rush off. I mean, they're not always there for the school run. They're either on work or a conference call or a meeting. And it's tough. It is tough for me to rack my brain and come up with stuff to answer them with what I'm doing. I mean, and this is like something, the podcast here is something I'm really excited about, but I'm going to tell no one in case it's shit. But if it's really good, then I can say, well, I'm podcasting.
Doing podcast
today.
Now, actually.
I'm a podcaster, yeah.
Yeah.
A few things that have been on the back burner deck.
I know one.
Go on then.
I remember vividly you wrote or started to write a sitcom. Remember that? Well, obviously you do because you wrote it. Tell us about that. I remember, I'm still waiting for it. We're all still waiting for it to drop. Now you've got no excuse.
Yeah, I lost the hard drive for that one. The sitcom, it was. I mean, it was a masterpiece. I need to find that. I mean, there's probably a couple of bitcoins on that fucking hard drive.
Really?
As well. Yeah. No. I mean, if it was, I would be trying to find it. It was like, do you remember Entourage?
I remember Entourage, yeah.
It was Entourage meets In Between Us,
wow,
of the boxing world.
Mm.
So, and I was with the Haymaker. David Hay was the face, and then it was all the guys inside the stable and the moving cogs. And lots of funny shit would go on day to day.
I can imagine.
And I realised that this is like Entourage meets In Between Us. There's some gold in here. And I started not noting a few bits down. Might revisit it.
What are you missing, though? Because you mentioned David Hay's gym there, for instance. You know, your life was totally different a few years ago. What do you miss most? What does everyone miss most, do you think?
Some people miss the camaraderie of the gym. When I was at the end, we was in Shane McGuigan's gym. We would describe that camaraderie as shit chat.
Yeah, lots of it.
There was lots of shit chat around.
And that's why he started a podcast.
Yeah. The sort of the training, dieting, getting into shape, getting punched in the face, that sort of stuff you can kind of leave at the door. But punching people in the face was always a lot of fun. And I don't do that a lot now. One, because people, it's
illegal.
It's illegal, yeah, mm. It is illegal. And two, no one wants to pay me for it. So, you know, you get spoilt like that.
What about the buzz? I can only imagine, or to be honest, I can't imagine that buzz. Like you said, Bramall Lane, outdoors, Fedor Chudinov, ref waves it off, all your wildest dreams realised, got the belt, WBA champion. What about that? That buzz is gone.
Yeah, that buzz is gone. But also, sometimes there's quite a bit of stress, and then there's quite a bit of actual relief, you know, when that fight is over. So Bramall Lane winning the belt, fourth attempt after jubilant derailments up until that point, it's an amazing feeling, of sheer relief, you know. I had my two mega fights against a Brit in the UK against Froch, but I lost both. One, I was rendered unconscious, as he so eloquently describes it, staring up at the stars in Wembley. When I get the homecoming, I beat a lovely young man named Chris Eubank Jr., defence of my world title belt, when people probably had me as an outsider, an underdog for that night. I dislocated my shoulder. So, yeah, I was trying to do a lap of honour with one arm up rather than two.
That was a mad one, I remember that.
It sucks the fun out of it. I don't know if anyone else dislocated their shoulder. It does, it sucks the fun out of the room, really, real quick as well.
I don't reckon you're totally done yet, maybe. Because I remember when you retired, let's not forget, you turned your back on potentially millions of pounds in one potential rematch against James Agel, someone you've beaten twice already, and you said no. So we need to start now thinking about what it's going to take to get you back.
Make me an offer.
I'm thinking, well, let's write off Saudi. Don't fancy that.
Nah.
You tick Wembley Stadium already.
Done it.
Didn't quite enjoy it. Stamford Bridge. Never happened.
Smaller,
but it's your home. It's your home.
Bit more.
What about Vegas, the new stadium in Vegas? I'll tell you what. Let's go new stadium in Vegas. Go 10 million quid. 50% of the UK TV, 50% of the US pay-per-view. At light heavy, so you ain't got to make...
You had me up until light heavy.
All right, cruiser, but it means you got to fight some big 200-pound beast. So look, work with me.
I'll fight anyone. Like,
if Arvin's cruiserweight, what do you reckon to put him away?
For Arvin at cruiser.
Okay, I don't fancy your chances, mate.
No, I mean, nah.
But you did Las Vegas. You did Las Vegas, didn't you? MSG.
Okay, right.
Think about that. The Mecca.
Yeah.
The Mecca. Again, you can choose your weight. We'll say 10 million, 50% of the UK and the US. You can pit your opponent as well within reason. We can discuss that. And you've got 12 weeks.
Yeah.
We're back in business.
We're back in the room.
Okay, just need to stump up 10 million quid from somewhere. This people better listen to this podcast. Don't know what we're going to pay the opponent yet, so they could be terrible. I was looking at your record. The geezer you beat on your debut, I think Kamil Pasonko, something like that. I think it's time for a rematch. And I have no idea what he weighs.
Kirill Pashonko is a, I think he's from Latvia. Or
he was. Latvia. Yeah. Latvia, yeah.
And I used to have a regular sparring partner called Sergei, who's very good friends with Kirill Pashonko. And he would show me pictures and videos of Kirill, who not just boxed, but did very impressive street dance.
Really?
Yeah. So it could make it into some sort of like tournament format where it's not just boxing we're competing in. I don't know what other talents he has. And big final could be badminton. Cookery. I've already got a coach for it. I've already got a coach for it.
Stay clear. Yeah, it's true.
This could be it. It could be it.
10 million quid though. I mean, if we're watering it down, I might have to knock a couple off. But it's still decent money. He'll want some as well. Maybe we should get him in as well. Let's get Pasonko in.
He might still be fighting. I haven't checked his box rec lately.
I mean, you paint a good picture of retirement, to be honest, but there must have been a bit of difficulty there. There must have been a dark time. What do you reckon, for you, what was the hardest bit about retirement?
Essentially, you've lost your identity to a certain degree. You know, you are a boxer. You know, I've been a boxer in my mind since I was 10 years of age. And then introducing yourself as a professional boxer is who you are. And now you're in a different world, in that civvy world, where you expect to be at that level that you're at in boxing, in the next field that you choose to be in, and you're not. You realise that, you know, it's going to take some work and some effort, and that's kind of why you've all packed in boxing, is because you don't really want to do anything strenuous for the foreseeable future.
Do you feel like people treat you differently, speak to you differently? Maybe people who were friends or you fought with friends who were part of the journey, but now you're sort of, that journey's over, that interaction's changed at all?
Yeah, no, I think they do. I think and boxing moves on real quick, you know, real, real quick. I'll be at a show now and then a dad will come up with his teenage son and say, "We're big fans of you. We remember this fight, that fight." And then he'll go, David, come here. Because the kid's name's David. And then he'll say, "Right, look, it's George." And he's like, "Yeah." And then he's like, George Groves, Wembley. And he's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Hi, David. How old are you?" He's like, "I'm 14. I'm thinking, oh, he ain't got
He was photo. Eight then.
He was eight. If that, he was younger. So I said, "Come, let's have a photo." Yeah. So we have the photo. And I go, "That's another satisfied customer."
Mm.
Not everyone will gravitate towards me at a boxing show. I mean, that's where obviously we'll get recognised most, because there's a lot of boxing fans. But there'll be some, because, you know, I haven't been on Instagram that week, that I'm ignored. All them fights, all them big nights, all them world title wins. Yeah, boxing moves on real quick. Who stands out to you as, "I'm really glad they retired then," or if they talk about, "Oh, I'm coming back out of retirement," is there anyone you thought, "Yeah, no, that makes sense," or have you shuddered at, "I don't think that's the right decision"?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few, aren't there? Because you've got to think about age-wise, like I said with you, that you always think before 40, you probably still got a chance of hanging in there and going again. I remember being at the Ricky Hatton when he boxed Senchenko. Remember that, when he came back? And that for him was one of them where he'd obviously got knocked out badly by Manny Pacquiao. So he felt totally unfulfilled. He couldn't walk away from that. So he was like, "I need to go again." And he went again and he got all the weight off. He ended up getting stopped. Body shot, I remember it. It was, you know, it was a big fanfare, big night in Manchester, full. And then he gets hit by his body shot. Ironically, a body shot who Ricky Hatton was putting everyone away with them in his career. Then he ends up doing it. Whole place goes silent. Afterwards in the presser, it seemed like he was content. He lost, he'd got stopped in Manchester, but he was like, "That's fine, I can do that. I can't do the Manny Pacquiao defeat." What happens mainly is people keep going on longer. They keep going on for too long, don't they? And you can see it. Like Roy Jones Jr., one of my favourite fighters ever, I feel like if he'd retired against John Ruiz when he won the world heavyweight title, if he'd retired that night in the press conference, we might be talking about him as the greatest ever. Like, certainly top 3-5. But because he didn't, and he's still going, and he's getting knocked out in Russia and all this sort of stuff, it just tarnished that legacy a little bit. And now, still great, his achievement up to Ruiz has not changed in any way, but it's sort of tarnished it a bit. And I think it's impossible to avoid that. And that's why when I see you and you think you retired at 30 and you've done it, to be honest, I remember thinking, he'll come back.
Well, never say never, Beck. I'm waiting for that contract to show up from you. And talking about the dad and the son who want to talk to me and have a, you know, the dad remembers Wembley Stadium, but if I come out of retirement now, the son ain't going to know about that. He's going to be thinking about this version of myself, and maybe it's not quite as good as it once was, or it's a different sort of setup. There is that nostalgia. If your favourite fighter decided to come out of retirement and have a move around, you know, is it like going and seeing the Rolling Stones now? You know they're not as good as they used to be, but you're still going to have a great night.
I look at Mike Tyson and Roy Jones, that sold well on pay-per-view, that was a spar, basically. That's not even a proper fight. So, like, yeah, I think it is a bit of that nostalgic feeling. But then the funny thing is that it can go too far, like what you said with the guy and his son. Are there enough people who remember you, not you, but remember the boxer who's coming back? Are there enough people to make it worthwhile? Because there's probably nothing sadder than a comeback that's not worthwhile commercially, financially, but also doesn't tick the box for them, because then they're still just going through it all. Maybe end up losing, putting themselves in harm's way, and nobody cares. That's got to be the saddest thing.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, but no one cares.
And no one cares. Because that's really what boxing's about, isn't it? People caring enough to watch you have a fight.
I boxed Cole Frotch at Wembley Stadium in front of 80,000 people, and I lost. And then we went back the next fight, and we went back to Wembley Arena.
I was there.
It's not quite as big as the stadium. 8,000 people capacity, and we struggled to sell tickets.
Really?
And it was, yeah. And you're like, I was there three months
DeLuisa
ago.
Or Rabras?
Rabras. Christoph, yeah. Rabras. European good title, fighter. Final eliminated for WBC world title, world ranked number 3. Fall from grace, Deck. Oh, it's tough, mate. It was tough. But that, you know, so I suppose I'm fortunate enough to have experienced a few of these things along my way that will correct me along the way. I've got an idea for you, Deck.
Go
on. I'm sitting on this one. Another one in the old think bank.
Go on, then.
Prize fighter legends.
Oh, what weight?
Any weight.
Okay, we'll just assume everyone's about 15 stone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And then anyone who's kept themselves in shape,
yeah,
who goes in it? Right, we need 8.
We'll get Mike Tyson in because he's, look at him, I mean, he's still flying.
I've got to be honest, I'm trying to keep costs down
keep
a little bit.
Down.
Yeah,
the
keep costs down.
Not cheap.
Yeah, it needs to, enough big names to sell out Wembley. We'll sacrifice a bit of cheddar.
Would they?
I'm see if the mic can pick it up.
Yeah, no, that little bunch.
A bit of bunts.
A bit of bunts, okay. Bunts. I reckon we'll get Joe Calzaghe in. Ricky Hatton's having a comeback already. Lennox, get him in. I guarantee he'd be up for it. We'll get you and James in. You and James to go.
Me and James will go in.
Yeah, because everyone will be hoping for that as the final. Get actually, Frotch won't because of his nose, will he?
No, Frotch is... I mean, Frotch...
Is that for it?
Frotch will go in, yeah.
Okay, so we got one space. How about someone like Tony Bellew?
But I was thinking
yeah,
Bellew.
You're thinking Bellew. I'm thinking then, with all that in mind, weight-wise, I'm thinking it's either got to be Andre Ward or it has to be Mikel Kessler.
Yeah.
Andre Ward just about made a doc about his life, so he'd probably be up for it for the publicity. Although if he loses in the first round, it's going to kill the sales, isn't it?
But Ward probably won't lose.
He won't lose, will he?
He'll win it.
He will, just like
the
Super
Six. And he's the only one who's not British.
Yeah, he'll talk about it for ages, won't he?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, stick him in. Who are you picking?
Quarterfinal.
This is interesting, actually, because you're giving weight away to some people. You don't want to kill the De Gale final chance. I'm sure you love Ricky Hatton, but he is smaller than you. So who are you going?
Yeah, Ricky's probably the smallest in there.
Yeah.
I'll be able to keep him at range for 3 rounds, I reckon.
Yeah.
But he's a body snatcher.
He is.
I don't want that heat.
Joe Calzaghe is obviously the legend.
And he throws 400 punches a round.
Yeah.
I don't know how I can beat someone over 3 rounds if they're going to throw that many punches.
Yeah.
Lennox is a slow star. He's a big puncher. So
calling out Lennox Lewis on the podcast.
I'll go De Gale.
So you're going to go James De Gale in the quarterfinal?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, De Gale, I think, because I know him. It's enough. You ain't got really much time to warm in. So we're going to do 3 threes.
Are we talking all on the same night?
On
like
the
a prize
same
fighter?
Night. Can you imagine the same night?
Yeah. So Groves De Gale, 1 quarterfinal. I think we have to go Lennox. And just to be serious, we're probably going to have to put him in with Tony Bellew. So we say Andre Ward against, who was the other one? Joe Calzaghe. That's always the...
Yeah.
That's always
it.
The...
And that gets rid of one of them, which is great.
And that's always the one that people talk about. Calzaghe, great, but Ward could neutralise.
On the other side of the draw for me, Deck.
Yeah, he is. Well, we'll talk about that in a sec. And then the last one, that means we've got Hatton against... Who was the last one? Frotch.
Frotch, yeah.
Hatton, Frotch. Okay. Nice. I mean, who are we picking there? Let's go straight for Hatton Frotch.
I'm going Hatton.
Are you?
Hatton's in the gym.
Okay, so who's going to win out of George Groves and James De Gale?
I'll win that one.
You're 2-0 up, so you reckon hat trick
3-0? Yeah.
Okay, well, the bad news is you're fighting the winner of Lennox Lewis against Tony Bellew. I mean, are you picking Lennox long in the tooth? But he is maybe the greatest British heavyweight of all time. But can he beat a younger, fresher Tony Bellew?
I'm going to let you make that call, Deck.
I'm going to say Lennox.
Yeah, let's go Lennox. Yeah. Lennox.
Lennox is going to nick it. Okay, so we've got two very good semi-finals here.
Yep, Battle of the Jabs.
What do we say, Ward Calzaghe, though?
I'm going to go Ward.
But what are his hands up to?
I think he'd talk Calzaghe.
Okay, well, we've got George Groves against Lennox Lewis in the first semi-final one. Now, bear in mind, you've done 3-3s. Based on your previous two fights against James DeGale, it's going to go the distance. And you're gonna have to work for it.
I've got to have at least 20 years on Lewis, and I.
Yeah.
Has he woke up, like, as in physically livened up a bit? And well, he's done the first three.
Maybe
rounds.
Did in the quarter. Yeah, just shook it off a little bit.
Also, is he thinking there's been no weigh-in? This is just open weigh-in. So is he thinking super middleweight and
no
underestimating
problem.
103 kilos right hand coming out?
He's underestimating that whippy body shot as well.
I reckon Lewis edges me out.
Really?
Yeah, I reckon just edges. Only
on
edges
points.
Me out of points. Yeah.
Points. What? Like split decision?
Yeah.
Over three.
I think.
Okay. So
I don't think he throws a right hand till the third round.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think it lands. I think by then I'm already curled up in a ball.
Yeah, you've had enough. All right. Well, then the other semi. I think it's easier one to pick. You've got fresh Andre Ward, who only fought about 2 years ago. Oh, to be fair, Ricky Hatton's back in the gym though. So against Ricky Hatton, how's he getting on against Andre Ward, the neutralizer?
Yeah, I think he probably gets neutralized.
Yeah,
to be honest,
gets points. So then we got a final of Lennox Lewis against Andre Ward.
See now Lennox is awake.
Yeah, he's up
for it. He knows Ward.
But is he knackered?
I don't think I took it out of him, to be honest. Tried to sneak the first, gave away the second,
yeah,
and then tried to bum rush the third. You know, I screamed blue murder. Like it was a dodgy decision.
Shoulder gone.
The left arm fatigues real quick now.
Yeah.
And it was a battle of the jabs between me and Lewis.
And he's got about 6 feet on you.
A little bit of a height and reach.
Andre Ward probably a bit of jet lag as well by then. Because he probably only flew in on Thursday because he sort of thought, take the piss here.
We're doing this at Wembley, not your call.
No, it has to be your call.
Your call.
It has to be your call in front of, what, 1,200?
Yep.
Yeah. And he's got no backing, by the way. Ward, he's getting booed. And people are in there for Lennox by this point. Lennox Lewis is Lennox Lewis, to be fair. Probably people put a pint down and have a look at that. But, I mean, you hope that there's a few hundred people in the York Hall to watch Lennox Lewis get
It's
Andre
only who only people left are the ones who backed Lewis before it started.
Yeah.
So how many of them are left? If it ain't great odds, and
Ward's
how many of them
are
left?
I'm sorry, Ward's not getting much love in York Hall. And I must say, if you look back at prize fighters, Audley Harrison won, I think, three. So we're talking about big, long, heavyweights, good jab.
Go on then, I'll go with that.
Lennox Lewis is the winner.
Yep.
I feel a bit bad for Carl Froch. You barely got to mention that.
And then you could be in the ring at the end, you know, with the postcode lottery check.
Yeah, yeah,
there you
the
go.
Big one.
For Lennox, there you go.
How much? Whatever we take on the bar.
Yeah. If Ward could do comms as well that night to save a few bit of money in between the fights.
And Bellew. Because Bellew's going out in the semi, so he could... Right, in the quarters, actually, so we could do the rest of it. I don't think we'll have a problem with it. You eight, you're already in. And that was as much like in the Super Series. Once they heard you were in with the belt, they were like, everyone started falling in line. So I think we're in business.
Let's go.
Okay, so George, club's open. I feel like that is enough to get you subscribed. And if you haven't already, make sure you do.
And it will get better, Deck. I will make you that personal promise now. You're in the club. The club's going to get better. The show's going to get better. Week on week on week.
And if you want another podcast to listen to, check out The Joe Marler Show. As I'm sure you're aware, Joe is an England rugby player, but his podcast is not about rugby. Instead, he's meeting ordinary folk. He's meeting bouncers, magicians, cheesemongers, prison guards, you name it, he's meeting them. And I'm asking all about the jobs they do. And if you want one episode to start on, search for The Joe Marler Show and look for the one about drug trafficking. It will blow your mind.
Perfect, Deck. We are back next Wednesday, and who have we got?
We have got maybe the biggest and most successful boxing trainer in this country at the moment. We're pulling out all the stops. We've got Shane McGuigan.
My old coach. Mm. We're getting Shane on to talk about pads. I love talking about pads. I love pads. I love doing pads with Shane McGuigan. He loves taking people on pads. It's going to be insightful and fascinating, and I'm going to make him laugh because I am hilarious.
So have we got a feature in mind for Shane already?
Of course I do.
How many?
I've got lots. I'm not going to give them away yet. You're going to have to listen to next week's show to hear it. What a feature.
Can't wait. We'll see you next week.
Sports Social Podcast Network.